There's the value in the words that a young guy you was writing, golden insights to the world, or the demons you were fighting. Grab an older piece of work, grab a seat, let's talk it through. Be an open book, let's take a look at paragraphs lost, that's what we do.
You're listening to Paragraphs Lost, a show where writers dig up the work from their early teens. You know, the stuff that made their parents proud enough to keep in the attic, or the fanfiction that lay forgotten on forums, brimming with ambition and unfortunately lost to the world. Each week, our guests pick a story from those years, read them aloud, and learn to forgive themselves for being 13 years old. I'm Tim Hewitt. This week...
April 6th, 1999. Dear Journal, if I were 5 inches taller, I would be 5'3". I would be able to slam dunk. Then all the kids would look up to me. So I would be a hero. Then I would play for the Bulls and help them win the championship. Now, this one's real interesting.
Hi there. Welcome to Paragraphs Lost. Today we have Andrew Sanford. Hi, Andrew.
Hello. Hi, Tim.
How you doing?
Dude, I am fantastic right now.
I'm glad to hear that.
Thank you.
So what kind of work have you brought today?
So I brought, apparently, I'm going to say that this was, it says June 99. So when I was about 10 years old, I had to keep a journal for my, I'm going to guess, fourth or fifth grade class.
Mm-hmm.
So I have some journal entries from that. And then I have from a literary magazine when I was in high school, a poem that I wrote. I've done a lot of writing in my lifetime. Poetry has never been my strong suit, and I think I think it's going to show.
So was this like an experiment with poetry that kind of you decided after this you're not going back to it?
If I remember correctly, it was specifically for the literary magazine we were doing poems. I can't think of any other reason why I would have chosen to do poetry. Okay. Not a single one other than having been forced.
Right.
And
in high school, this was a class, right?
Yes. It was foreign English, or I believe actually this was a literary magazine. So I think it was actually like extracurricular.
Okay.
Yeah. It was called The Double-Edged Sword. Yeah. Right.
That's a dramatic little title for a
high school. Buddy. It's and I have to say right off the bat that I haven't spoken to a lot of the other people that would be featured in this literary magazine. So I don't want to make it seem like, oh, man, it's just 60 pages of high school nonsense. Mine is probably the worst one in there. Everybody else is. We're taking school much more seriously than I was at the time.
It's such an apt title because, first of all, you get published and that's nice, but then you come back to it like years later and like,
yep.
Oh, I get it. I get the title now. This is where you get cut. Cool.
It's like, oh, it's our first writing work, and in that same vein, it's like, ooh, it's our first writing work.
Right. Okay, but let's start with this journal, because this was even farther back. So you even have these dated as 1999.
Yes.
So tell me about Andrew in 1999.
Ooh, I know that there was a lot of eczema going on. That was a big thing for me growing up, and it's still fairly bad, but it used to be much worse.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of allergies, a lot of extra poundage and big old glasses.
Uh-huh.
So I would say actively, because I was already a little bit different than most, mm-hmm. I would try to act accordingly.
Uh-huh.
And I would say that people probably had to put up with quite a bit from me. I'm loud. I'm a little outgoing. And at the time, especially in 1999, when I am in my everything can be related to a quote from The Simpsons phase.
Oh, you grew out of that?
Oh, right. Yes. Only slightly.
What's that like?
Only slightly. I can say, especially at this age, I think when you're young, you don't realize that describing a joke to somebody is not as funny as witnessing the joke itself.
Or that you can't just keep saying a joke over and over again and expect to get the same reaction.
Yeah, you get it. Yeah, you get it. Exactly.
Right. It's not like music. It's a totally different thing.
I remember my parents often questioned why I liked the character of Smithers so much. I would say up until I got married to my wife this past October, they would still, it was hard for them to understand why I thought a gay character was so funny.
What do you think it was? Do you have any reflections on that now?
I mean, I think they just saw that those were the jokes that I thought were the funniest at the time. Like, uh-huh. And I started to gain an interest in theater around this time. Yeah, it was like this perfect windstorm.
God, I feel like the same exact thing happened to me and everybody, like, especially my... Yeah, people started to think twice. Well, because I remember... and my dad listens to this podcast, so he might remember this too. So I had this one song from Company, and it was like... Mm-hmm. You know, like those old USO tour shows where, like, the girls come out and sing. So there's a song that was just like that. And I love that song. So I listened to it over and over and over again. And see, so iTunes records how many times you're listening to a song. And so if you sorted by, like, most listened to right at the top of the list, you could Drive a Person Crazy by Stephen Sondheim. And my dad was like, Tim, what? Why? Because it's great, Dad.
Oh, man.
So, yeah.
Oh, no, boy. I remember specifically at one point my father, and it's not like, what cracks me up is I feel like they were very much trying to be like, if this is how it's going to be, we're going to be open-minded, and we're going to let him know right away that we're okay no matter how he turns out. So their intentions were always good, but then there would be instances where, like, I'd go to the video store with my dad and be like, oh, you know what? I think I'm going to – what's Rocky Horror Picture Show? I'm going to rent that. My dad's like, no, you don't need to be – you don't need to watch that right now. I was like, okay.
There's sort of like the coming out conversation, and you know, there's a whole thing about that, but then there's also the conversation of, no, I'm not actually gay. It's really a coming in conversation with your parents.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Oh, man. And I tried to find, I remember specifically in high school writing a story called So Your Parents Think You're Gay. And and the biggest thing that I remember about the story is that on the title page, I screwed up the your and your. So it was so YOU'RE parents think YOUR are gay.
They don't even care. They just want you to learn how to spell.
Exactly. but it was a whole, that was a big thing for me for a long time because I couldn't understand it. I was like, it felt like people were trying to tell me something about myself that was not true, but in a way, I remember putting up with some of that from some of the people at the literary magazine. There was it wasn't just my parents. That's a subject for a whole nother podcast.
Right. Right. I went through that whole thing too. And you know, in a way I'm glad that, it kind of happened. And I'm really glad now that a lot of those roles aren't as, concrete as they used to be, and I think it's like a little bit more okay to just be, you know, feminine and like things that are typically considered feminine, and that's got to be a little easier for some people without like being a thing or without people assuming that you are
right. Thing. I should be able to be at a party like I was last night and dance to Freedom 90 by George Michael with no judgments whatsoever.
Right,
I just like the song.
I should be able to sing along with Santa Baby without, like, drawn looks.
So... Tim, you get it, Tim.
All right. So back to 1999. Let's go ahead.
I don't know if it'll show too much here, but I remember there was, when I was this age, I had a weird obsession with becoming president. Like, that was an end goal for me, and that has changed significantly since then.
When did the job start looking too hard?
I would say probably once I was a straight A student up until about sixth grade.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what happened, but there was, I blame it on me getting friends. I always used to say, like, you can see a distinct drop off in my grades. once I, like, my weirdness started to become popular.
Friends will get you.
Definitely. Yeah, exactly. They ruin everything, man.
Yeah. I don't recommend it.
So that's where I'm at now. Friendless, loud, and a little chubby.
And you want to be president.
And I want to be president.
Okay, so let's read this first entry right here.
Sure. We've got May 26th, 1999. Dear Journal, last night I watched a real cool show. It was called When Accidents Happen 3. It was cool. One guy got hit by a train. He was killed right when he was hit.
You know, so
I don't think I've read it out loud since you had me look them up.
There's a lot going on here. I remember these shows, and I don't know if they're still on, but this was, they were labeled like this, When Accidents Happen 3, and they would just, like, run that over and over again, and I remember, was it, like, a nighttime thing, or
prime time, too, like, right. Easily, like, an 8 p.m., they're like, tonight after The Simpsons, this man's gonna get hit by a truck, like, that's, will he survive? Like, that was most of those shows.
Do you remember
Sorry, go ahead.
Do you remember the dramatic reenactments that they used to have?
Oh,
this?
Yeah! Oh, absolutely!
And they would just play the same clip of the actor, like, looking over his shoulder and then walking into the middle of the train track.
Keith thought he was just going out for groceries. He was wrong! Like, that's...
But, so, it's all about, like, these shows were all about stretching... You know, 1 minute, and you've done it very succinctly here. So in three lines, you've told the whole story of this hour-long program about this guy getting hit by a train.
Oh, man.
And this is all that show ever communicates, but I'm glad that you still enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think now I've changed very little. Now, if I get a couple whiskeys in me, there's nothing I love more than sitting down and watching fail videos on YouTube. And there's a thing called Fail Army. That's essentially what they do now, just in like 6 minute packages. What Fox used to do with an hour, Fail Army's like, nah, I got like 5 minutes. I can put like 30 videos in there.
Oh yeah, if you need video of a guy hit by a train, it's not it's not hard to find. I could get you a dozen of them right now.
Oh man,
it wouldn't and we could just like, you know, go right through them. We don't to have all this reenactment stuff, but I think that is kind of a thing that's missing them. I remember that When Animals Attack videos,
yeah,
those were the cool ones.
When Animals Attack,
they could drag out an alligator bite
for easily
about 2 hours and and I'd still be here for it.
Yep. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Sit down interviews with the person who was attacked. What were you thinking at minute two? What were you thinking at minute 2:30? Like, it's just that's
this is what people are complaining about when they say we don't have attention span anymore. We need a new wildebeest and a new person getting injured every 5 seconds. Or like, we're not not like how it used to be. All right, so a month passes and we're in June.
We're in June, June 15th, 1999. Dear Journal, a long time ago, I just want to make that very clear that I put a long as one word, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, I was trained as a Jedi Knight. I battled the Galactic Empire. I destroyed Darth Maul. He had a double lightsaber. He was trained well in the Jedi arts, so he was hard to battle. After I was sent to planet Earth to study humans, me and 50 others were sent. There was a big crash. I was the only one that survived. My life was in danger. Yeah, no doubt. I zapped myself into a parental unit.
What?
Ever since then, I forgot everything. Until now. Everything is clear. But that is only chapter one.
So there's a lot going on here.
Wow.
I like that your fourth grade self forgot that this was a journal about your life.
Yep.
You're like, you know what? No, I'm a Jedi.
Yep, I'm a Jedi. Today's not as interesting.
This must have been the same year that Phantom Menace came out.
Oh, absolutely. And I think there was another entry that I found in here that I think was shorter, where I think I briefly talk about. My dad worked in a movie theater at the time, and I got to see it about 4 days before it came out. Now, say what you will about the prequels now or whatever. But when you're 10 years old and you see that movie, it was pretty fantastic.
It was.
I remember very clearly loving Phantom Menace. And I still like, I'm not one of those, I'm a lover of all Star Wars. So I like everything. It's more important to like take what I like out of the prequels mm-hmm. instead of being mm-hmm. like complaining about what I don't like.
Right.
And I just, like, it makes me so happy to think that there was a time where there wasn't even that. I was just thinking, like, ah, man, that was great. I got to watch it. I drank Pepsi from a can with R2-D2 on it. I remember that was the whole thing.
Like, Taco Bell promos alone.
Oh, dude. I had the toys. Qui-Gon Jinn was, like, life for me. So I was heartbroken at the end of that movie. Spoilers for Phantom Menace.
You know, like, I watch these reviews of Phantom Menace, and they are all so on point. And, you know, like, as an adult, it's hard to enjoy these things.
Sure.
But you're right. Like, as a kid, that world was just an amazing place to be in, even if it didn't make any sense.
Absolutely.
And I miss just interacting with things in that way.
Totally. Say what you will, aside from, like, I would say both, like, no, because my niece saw Last Jedi, and she was apparently quiet during the whole time. Like, they're kids' movies.
Mm-hmm.
Still, like, they might have matured a little bit, but especially if you look at those first three, and then the prequel, like, they're kids' movies, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. It's okay to admit that you like things that are made for children. I don't like it when people are just like, no, this is how it's supposed to be. This is very serious. It was my childhood, but that's not the point because as an adult.
This should be made for me as a kid, and I should enjoy it in the way that I liked things when I was a kid.
Exactly.
But that's not the movie's fault. Like, no, at the end of the day, you got older, and that's... Yeah, there's this great YouTube commentator who I'll plug just because I think she's awesome, Lindsay Ellis, who just did a whole series on this with Lord of the Rings and then The Hobbit, and... And I think that's what she went through, and the way she describes it is like what a lot of us went through with like growing up with the originals and then the prequels come out. And then just having to admit, like, oh, well, I think we just grew up, and that's all that happened here.
Yeah. It's funny you mention that actually, because today I was working on something and I put on some TV for some background noise, and the first Hobbit movie was on, and I realized now I was probably 13 when I saw Fellowship in mm-hmm. theaters, and it hit me at exactly the right time. I had never read any of the books at that point. I had it changed me. Then I was all Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. And I remember I was so excited that they were making these Hobbit movies, even if they were stretching out the source material or whatever. And then I only saw the first one. It was on TV, and I was like, oh, man, I didn't even try to finish these movies. And it bummed me out so bad.
I mean, it makes sense.
yeah, thank you. Thanks, Tim. But I tell you, like, it's true. Like, it's something that – and what's interesting is they have some similar parallels in that, like, the – Lord of the Rings trilogy was one of those last big, big Hollywood studio, hundreds of extras building towns kind of movies. And then for these newer ones, they were just like, well, no, we can just, you know, computer generate 90% of this stuff.
Yeah. And you can tell, like, sad thing is it's so as good as computer generation gets, like, it's just always obvious.
Like, that's why, like, Force Awakens and Last Jedi have, like, a 50-50 to me, which is fine.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, they do enough. It's like, I don't need everything practical. Don't break the bank. Mm-hmm. But, like, I'd much rather see a puppet than, like, something that's clearly just somebody, looking at a tennis ball on a stick.
Yeah, it's not so much the because when you watch like Pixar movies, which are entirely 3D generated, everything reacts naturally. But when you have a real actor interacting with a fake environment, it kind of doesn't matter how good they are.
No, it really doesn't.
Because they're
agreed.
They're not looking in the right place. But this is us as an adult, like
right, absolutely, absolutely. Oh yeah, no. I'm sure. Like I would honestly, that's why I'm excited that my niece has started to get into some of these things, because I want to like see some of it through her eyes, mm-hmm. gain her perspective. Like for instance, it was a real big deal to take her to the Ghostbusters movie, the one that came out in 2016, because I had gotten her to watch the Ghostbusters cartoon. Then she started watching the movies, and it's all she wanted to watch. I remember telling her over the phone that they were going to make a Ghostbusters movie, that all the Ghostbusters were girls, and she freaked out. And we went and saw that movie, and did I love it? No, I just didn't. And that's okay. Everybody is allowed to make mediocre films. She was ecstatic entire time. And I was like, this is the point. I went and saw that terrible Fantastic Four reboot in theaters just because I was like, there's no way this could be as bad as everybody says.
The trailers were good.
Yeah, exactly. And there's still some, I still believe that the director's heart was in the right place, and there will be a documentary down the line about the production of that movie, because it's insane. There's all kinds of crazy he said, she said kind of stuff.
Oh,
but
really?
At the end of the day, I walked out of that theater and I saw a bunch of young Black boys running out of that theater screaming Flame On and being so excited to see Michael B. Jordan as the Human Torch that it made all of that null and void for me.
Right.
Like, any of the bad stuff, I was like, this is what it's about. Most of these movies are not great. Like, that's, and I, like, you and I especially, like, we grew up with that. You didn't always mm-hmm. get, like, quality films when it came to genre movies. But now you get that, so that when somebody makes one that's mediocre, people are just like ravenous to just rip it apart.
Right.
And it's annoying.
Well, you know, part of it is that we grew up when franchises were becoming a thing.
Sure.
I feel like the generation before us, they didn't have this experience. I guess they had books getting ruined by mediocre films. And that's what but we've had like films that we grew up and loved, and then they felt, I guess, attacked in the same way.
Right.
By these new iterations. But again, it's just like looking and recognizing that this is not something that's made for you.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Or just realizing when you like something that's bad, and that's okay.
Right.
Like, I just rewatched one of my favorite terrible movies the other day, Deep Blue Sea, because they put it on Netflix. Deep Blue Sea is a horrible movie that I will gladly sit down and watch whenever.
Yeah, I remember that one.
It's rough. But it's fun. Like, it's, don't get me wrong, from like, there's still elements of it that are just like screenwriting 101 nonsense, like things that whoever wrote this should know better.
Right.
But you just don't care, because all of a sudden Sam Jackson just gets eaten by a giant shark out of nowhere, and everybody's taking it so seriously. And like, you know, it's bad, but it's fine. Like ice cream or Cheez-Its.
There are bad movies, and then there are bad movies where at least you can tell everybody involved with this movie was having a great time making it.
Exactly.
And sometimes that just makes such a huge difference, and it's the only thing. Like, they loved this, even if it was terrible. And there's something super, super catching about that.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's one of those movies. The bad movie that I always quote, and when people say they hate this movie, I do not blame them at all. Kung Pao Enter the Fist was just
Oh, man. That's Tim, you and I are a lot alike. That one, I bet.
That one,
it was another one that hit me at just the right age, where I was like, this is ridiculous. I love it.
It's just awful. But then that guy comes on screen and he says, I need to order a pound of nuts. And he just screams, that's a lot of nuts. And every time I'm in tears over this stupid line.
Oh, I love that so much.
So, no, like, yeah, I get it. And I think everybody must know that they like something that's bad, and they should think about that.
Absolutely. It's a good therapy is to analyze the things that you like that might not be that good. And accepting that fact.
All right. So we got two more journal entries from 1999.
Yes, 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 yes. So we've got April 6th, 1999. Dear Journal, if I were 5 inches taller, I would be 5'3". I would be able to slam dunk. Then all the kids would look up to me. So I would be a hero. Then I would play for the Bulls and help them win the championship. Now, this one's real interesting because I am a fair weather basketball fan at best.
Was it just that day then? Guy.
I don't know. Maybe that era. I remember like being, and it's any time that I've like tried to follow basketball, I usually like, first, I would cheer for the Bulls. Then maybe I would like cheer for the Heat because I'm just like, or like the Cavs because I'm just like, I don't know any or much about who's playing right now. Right. But everybody seems to like and or hate these guys. So let me go with that.
I mean, I would have been a Bulls fan, too, but just because of Space Jam.
Exactly. Exactly. That's honestly, that's probably part of the reason as well. but I'm very impressed with my confidence that I think I would be able to dunk if I was only 5 inches taller.
5'3".
Yeah, not so impressed with my spatial awareness.
Well, I'm 6'3", and like I can't jump to begin with, but I still can't do it, and I can't imagine having a whole nother foot to go.
I'm 10 here. I've only got. Both my younger brother is taller than me. My older brother is taller than me. My dad is taller. My dad and my brother are about your height. My younger brother is maybe about 2 inches, 3 inches shorter than you are.
Uh-huh.
Even my mom's got like an inch on me. Uh-huh. For whatever reason, I maxed out at 5'10". And you can tell I'm like really oddly barrel chested. So it's like I was supposed to keep growing at some point, but just didn't.
Uh-huh. It just never got there.
So, yeah. So reading this as well really, really brings me down a peg even further.
Well, I love this. And I really hope you don't feel that way because, like, there's such an escalation of optimism with each line. So it's like, if I were 5 inches taller, I would be 5'3". That's very realistic. That's just math. But then I would be able to slam dunk. That's pretty optimistic, but okay. Then all the kids would look up to me. I would be a hero.
Oh, man. Yeah, right? That's pretty. And then I downgrade. I'm like, oh, then I'll go play for the Bulls. But,
right.
Yeah, which, like,
I'll be a sports
time.
Championship star, which is not at the hero level quite yet. I'll just be part of the team. I'm okay with that.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that is woof. Yeah. You're right. I think we should only focus on the optimism.
Yeah, it's super aspirational. And you have some artwork here that I'll put up on the website.
Yeah, please go ahead. I don't know what the heck that is from at all either. I was looking at that and I was like, oh boy, that is. It looks like a lady who what I would only describe as having a sunflower head, maybe a beard.
Her shoelaces look like Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, I was about to say both of these guys have very prominent shoelaces.
or are Disney fans?
Yep. Yeah. Woof. And then we've got April 18th, 1999. Dear Journal, my favorite holiday is Halloween. On Halloween night, you get to watch, or you get a whole bunch of candy, whole spelled H-O-L-L. then you get pull pranks on people in scary costumes. Then you get to go home and watch a scary movie. I like It or The Shining. Those are both very scary movies. Now, this is 10-year-old me. Something that I often, whenever my mom will try to say anything about how I live my life, you know, mom stuff.
Right.
I very quickly point out, like, oh, Mom, weren't you the one who showed me Shining when I was, like, 7 years old? easily. Like, this is not a an Andrew who just recently saw The Shining and had his mind blown, nor an Andrew who recently saw It and had his mind blown. These were both favorites.
This is
by
right here.
The age of 10.
You have the evidence to back it up.
Oh yeah, dude, and it is. I try to explain that to people, but there is a constant conversation that my wife and I have where I say that when we have kids, I want to introduce them to certain things at a younger age, because I honestly think that kids are able to handle things better before they completely understand them.
Right.
And she disagrees. but it's something, and I'm not the best test subject to put forward.
I mean, kids run the gamut, though. Like, I know kids who would be, you know, at 8-year-old, totally fine with watching It or The Shining, or much, much worse, because, let's face it, like, Saw kind of took things to another level that we never went back from, like, gore-wise. So, yeah, I've known kids who are, like, 8, and they're fine with that, and they kind of brag on how much they've seen. And then I know kids who, like, who can't watch Frozen because that's too scary for them. So it's really hard to know. It's totally based on the kid. I know that, like, if a scary thing happened in a movie, I had to leave the room, and I would, like, just...
Wow.
I would do this thing where we had a room next door with a door, so I would, like, shut the door almost all the way, and then I would peek through the corner, and I would still watch it. But it's like I thought every movie was The Ring, and, like, they could all just come out of the TV. You know what I mean?
Oh, man. Oh, that's
so, like,
amazing.
I was just protecting myself from that.
That's so... No, I used to... I have very clear memories of if I had to get up in the middle of the night to use the restroom and had to get back in my bed, I would often jump into my bed because I was certain that if my feet got close to the bottom of the bed, something would grab me. like, that's... But I used to, like, just love that feeling. I remember there was a while, I think, when I... Like, I would definitely like watching those movies then. I would still be scared by them. But then I hit a point where something just clicked in my brain that, like, none of it was real.
Mm-hmm.
And that opened the floodgates. Like, then I was just like, well, let me watch everything humanly possible, horror-wise. And now it's honestly, like, most of the things that I write are horror-related.
Mm-hmm.
One of the main things that I've had published in my career so far was a horror story. Like, it was... it has permeated who I am, and now, like, I just watch them for fun or to, like, fall asleep.
Mm-hmm. Jeez.
Yeah, man. So it's weird. I had always assumed that I had that kind of mentality when I was younger, but I can just say thank you to you for putting this assignment to me, because I would not have had it in writing had I not gone and looked for this.
And you can prove it. It goes back, man, a long way.
Exactly.
I'm trying to think of, like, because I definitely, I wouldn't say that I actively avoided horror movies, but my dad didn't like them, so I didn't see many of them. And I think the first, this is going to sound weird, but I think the first horror movie I saw was at a birthday party in middle school. And it was...
Oh, that makes sense.
It was Ghost Ship.
Ooh. Oh, man, what an interesting... The early 2000s were a very interesting time for horror movies.
You know, like, it felt like any idea really could get greenlit. Which, you kind of got to go to indie movies now to see, like, the really cool stuff in horror. But Ghost Ship was weird. But I will say, you know, it's not a great movie, but the thing that has always stuck with me, and I can still see it now, is... Have you seen this movie?
It's been a long time. Probably, like, when it came out and was, like, on HBO, I probably saw it.
Right, but... right. So the first thing that happens in the movie is this wire cuts across the ship, and it just, like, cuts everybody in half.
Ooh.
And that's the thing I really remember, because I was on boats a lot with exactly those wires growing up. So one, like, part of me, half of me was like, okay, I know for a fact that those wires can't do that. And then the other half of me was very afraid of those wires for, like, the rest of my time on boats.
I love that, too, because I feel like, when Ghost Ship came out, Hollywood had just finished running the gamut on, like, haunted house movies,
mm-hmm.
which were, like, popular, like, and a lot of them were remakes, too, but you had, like, The Haunting and House on Haunted Hill and 13 ghosts and all these like different variations. And I feel like Ghost Ship is such a like Die Hard style elevator pitch where somebody was just like, listen, you've heard of haunted houses. How about haunted house on a boat? Right.
And it's not even like a pirate boat. It was like a cruise ship.
Yeah, it was like a cruise liner, right?
Yeah.
It was amazing.
It was a good one. Everybody else was really excited about seeing it. So I guess that's the last of the journal entries that you had.
Tis.
It looks like you had a pretty positive note. Check plus.
So, yeah. Good job. Right. Yeah. Apparently she wants to see me play, which,
well, who wouldn't?
As a child at the time, I can tell you the only thing that was happening during basketball was me getting my glasses broken by not being able to catch the ball. Oh, that's the most interesting thing about both of these entries is A, I, especially at the time, was one of the least athletic children that you could meet. And B, there was no way that I was pulling pranks on anybody.
Well, you must have gotten that from a movie. I was going to ask about
something.
That,
yeah, it must have. It must have. Like, I can especially like at that age, I was obsessed with like as somebody who like just watched a lot of TV and watched a lot of movies. I'm sure I was like, oh, kids in movies and TV pull pranks and stuff. So I should say that's what I do. oh boy.
Right. No, I have seen Halloween pranks pulled on every bit of Halloween thing in media, and I don't think I've never known anyone who pulled a prank on Halloween.
Same.
Like in that style. I don't know anybody who ever egged a house or TP'd a tree. Like, and I had friends who would do that. They just like, so I'm not sure this is the thing that actually happens.
Amazing.
All right, so we move forward in time. So what year of high school is this?
It is either junior or senior year. I'm 80% positive that it's junior year.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think I had, this might have been sophomore year, I believe, because I was in a creative writing class. Yes, it was. It was sophomore year. I was in a creative writing class. Mm-hmm. And because of that creative writing class, I was able to trick my way into an AP English class the next year, or an honors English class. I don't think I made it to AP. I can toot my own horn and say that I am a talented writer. I can say that with some confidence.
Uh-huh.
I was, however, a terrible student. I could not be bothered to do homework. It was always much easier to sleep during class than it was to pay attention. And I even got to a point where I remember I had a math teacher who would be furious if she ever caught me sleeping because I had found a way to do it with my like head in my hand and while holding a pencil in the other hand.
I did the same thing.
So if she caught me fully asleep, it means that I had been doing that for at least 5 minutes and she didn't figure it out. She would
That's pretty good.
Rightfully so, furious with me.
I had a French teacher like that. But here's the thing. She wanted to be creative with her room, so she brought in couches. This is third period, right after lunch.
I don't know
what you wanted from me.
You did this!
Everything about this says sleep, Tim.
Amazing.
That's what I did. And I didn't learn much French because, well, one, I was asleep, and two, I was also a terrible, terrible student. I didn't do any homework, which I learned you kind of, like, you can fake it in math. You can't fake learning a language on a test.
Oh no.
No.
No, doesn't. I was actually thinking the other day, I had a big Spanish project. Just as a quick precursor, and I used to make this joke on stage a lot, I took 3 years of Spanish, but my Spanish teacher told me to stop taking it because I wasn't any good.
Mm-hmm.
But she told me that in Spanish, so I showed up for like two more semesters.
Because she didn't understand it.
Yeah, exactly. But no, it was terrible. And I remember, like, I tried my hardest on a Spanish quiz once and got a zero. Like, really specifically remember studying and trying and still getting a zero. Yeah, dude. And at one point, I remember I did a Spanish, like, we had to do a Spanish project where it was some, like, booklet of, like, some of our favorite things. And I was like, well, I'm going to use a translator, but I'm going to make the rest of the project look so good that she's not going to notice. Guess what, Tim? She noticed immediately. Yeah, immediately.
Those things don't work. I learned that.
No.
I learned that lesson over and over and over again.
Yo, and she, like, opened it up, and she took it. She's like, Andrew, this looks amazing. And, like, had a big smile, and, like, first page, frown. You used a translator, didn't you? And I was like, how could you possibly know that? And she's like, we haven't learned how to do what you're saying on this first page, like, at all. This would have been an advanced, and I was like, ugh. And she literally went to the rest of the class, and she was like, all right, everybody, Andrew's not passing this project because he used a translator, but this is how your project should look.
Oh. And then you named the literary journal Double-Edged Sword. Because that was on your mind.
Those kids, like, I can only imagine. And the kids I know that I was on this literary magazine with, some of them, the ones that I've, like, kept up with, I know have done some, like, they're all creative, like, or for the most part, like, creative, studious people. They must have been so furious that I was in this magazine with them, just half-assing it across the board. And I think the poem is proof of that. This is really something that I know I must have done 2 days before it was due, even though we were given weeks. Like,
It certainly reads a bit like that.
It really does.
So let's have you just read it, and then we'll talk about it after.
It's called Answer by Andrew Sanford. Late night, shady colored moon, clock ticking, my pencil moves, turning my thoughts into reality as I write about pictures in my head. They dance about, filling my head with foolish hopes of fame, hopes of importance, hopes of meaning. I pause, sitting still as the disc spins. It spins, releasing the voices of those who have achieved their foolish dreams or foolish hopes. My brain is racked as I try to find the answer of what my pencil should create. Sleep. Sleep is the answer. Sleep is what I need to fuel my pencil and my thoughts. Darkness comes as the shades come down over the windows. I start to dream, dreaming of escape as I fly straight as an arrow on a battlefield. Nightmare. I drop, hitting the ground with a powerful force. Suddenly I am surrounded by those who care for me. They begin to ridicule, poking and prodding. They rip apart the fabric of my soul. I run but can't escape the judgment. It runs through my head in a continuous loop. I sit as the disc spins. My paper on my nightstand fills with thoughts. Then my nightstand is replaced instantly as a desk appears. Quiz. I am not prepared. The thoughts on my paper dissolve, fading into nothingness. I am left with a blank question. Oh boy, typo. a blank question as one is written across the board. What is the meaning of your life? I freeze as my classmates quickly write their answers. Back in my chamber as it fills with water to the very top. What to do? As I struggle to breathe, I panic. Images flash before my eyes, images of disappointment. Of moments pushed from my brain, returning in my darkest hour. Empty. Empty are my thoughts as the water leaves my room, replaced with sand and a small wooden box. Plastic shovel in my hand, I begin to dig, excited by the smallest things I find. And then I grow, crushed by the weight of the world. New feelings ravage my body as I miss the days of old, moving through life like a faceless slug until the day I move out. Struggling through life, working for wages smaller than a microscopic germ. Last days, I see my funeral, eyes completely dry. Awake. The shades lift from the windows as I return to my room, never really leaving. I look at my paper, covered in thoughts, and the answer comes to me. My pencil moves swift and clear, my soul onto paper, helping my realize that writing is what is meaningful can give a story life. That creating something meaningful is beauty, and creating life is the most meaningful thing of all. Oh boy.
So there's a lot here.
There's a lot going on. There's a lot going on. I've never been somebody who has tried to be directly personal in my work. Mm-hmm. I did some of that in my stand-up, mm-hmm. Because you have to, kind mm-hmm. of. But even like my better jokes, I think, would come across with things where I would like lie or embellish or change things up.
Right.
Like this, I feel like me was trying to tap into some 10th grade depression that I had that everybody runs through.
You know, like people, like, I grew up with, you know, that whole sense of ironic detachment. And I will say that every time I've tried to write something that was as sincere as it could possibly be, it looks something like this.
Yeah, right? It's just, it almost, like, especially the end, I'm just like, oh, God, I would hate to have lunch with this kid. Like, if this is the kind of stuff that I was talking about at this time, my IMs must have been the worst.
Ooh.
Like, yeah, man. Ooh. Oh, I can only imagine.
God, do you think this exists somewhere?
Oh, probably. I don't know. I'm trying to think. My wife's AOL account was deleted not too long ago.
Good for her.
Like, purged. Yeah. Like, by AOL's choice. They were basically like, we're not storing this anymore. It's gone. Like, and I don't know if that happened to mine or if I would be able to look up my instant messages at the time. But, ugh. Just... only terrible things. I'm sure.
I'm sure. No, AIM closed down completely.
Then yeah, those are probably lost to the history books. Lost to the ether.
You know.
Thank God.
Nobody can ever find them, and nobody can ever know. Well, I mean, do you? So you don't think that this was the kind of thing that you typically try? Then
not at all. I really, and that was one of the reasons that I wanted to bring it in, is it's mm-hmm. so unlike anything that I wrote before this, mm-hmm. anything that I really wrote after it. Like, mm-hmm. even I can think of some, I did like a couple semesters at the New School where I took some writing classes. Other than that, I was a theater conservatory person, but I actually, you and I got connected through a mutual friend, Ben Berryman. Mm-hmm. Because he and I took a class together at the New School.
Right.
And I remember, like, honestly, like, the only time I've ever written anything close to like this is as a joke. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, making fun of this kind of style or this kind of, like faux beat poetry. Because I don't want to, like, discredit beat poets as a whole.
Right.
This is my poor interpretation of what they do.
I mean,
and it's like insincerity through sincerity. Like,
yeah, no, I know what you mean. I think this is actually like the logic of this poem is almost straight as an arrow, you know, compared to like beat poetry, which is just, you know, they don't care if you get them or not.
Yeah.
There are some like threads here. Like you say you hadn't written anything, but there's this hopes of fame, hopes of importance, hopes of meaning. And like, you can go back to your journal entries and you'd see that in both the Jedi Knight and the,
sure. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Is that something that you remember feeling a lot? Is that something you still have? Like just, cause I know I do. Certainly.
Absolutely. And it's definitely like, you know, it's, it's definitely fears that still permeate me. Like, I've had some minor successes, but it's still, you know, everybody, no, I don't want to sound like one of the, anybody who says they're not in it for the fame is full of shit kind of person. Cause that's not true. There are plenty of pure artists out there who could be perfectly happy with bartending for the rest of their lives and on weekends, like singing someplace. And that's what they want to do. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But to me, I have always been the kind of person who's been like, nah, I want to be famous. I want to get paid to make a movie. Like, I want to be somebody who, like, oh God, I was about to say something that's just a Roxy Hart quote. So I really had to quote myself or cut myself off there. Yeesh. But no, I've just always been one of those people. And it started when I did when I was, and it was shortly after these journal entries, I found myself in middle school and auditioning for the school musical, and I got to be Sancho in Man of La Mancha, and it was like a, you know, NBD, but it was like I was the only sixth grader in those three grades who got to, and it was, I think, extended to like four grades that year.
Right.
So I was the youngest person who had a lead.
Uh-huh. I'm sure your talent with Spanish really helped you get the role too.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh man. And it was also right before my voice dropped. Uh-huh. So it is all falsettos and like
good.
And I even remember going into that audition thinking like, oh, do you know what? I'm just going to try to sing like a Backstreet Boy because that's what like everybody thinks is good singing. And that's what got me the part. like being insincere.
Right.
But which is not a good way to start. But from that point on, it was all like, I was like, this is what I want to do. There have been brief moments in my life where I've thought like, maybe I could like be a teacher, or maybe I could do it. But even then I'm just like, yeah, no, that won't work.
Yeah.
I've worked some 9-to-5s where I'm just like, this is not how it's going to work for me. Mm-hmm. I had a girlfriend in high school, like a very serious girlfriend, who at one point, like I grew up in a small town in Pittsfield and or called Pittsfield in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And like, bless her heart, everything ended amicably and stuff like that. I wish her nothing but the best.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember her at one point, we had been dating for like 2 years. We were both going to go to different places for college. And she was like, we were like arguing about something. She was like, what's wrong with just being like, or no, I said, what do you think? I'm just going to like, you and I are just going to like live in a house in Pittsfield and had two kids and I'm going to like teach at the high school. And she's like, what's wrong with that? And I was like, everything is wrong with that. And like to her defense, like that's me being fairly unrealistic,
right.
Especially at like 17 or 18 years
right,
old.
Right.
I've even had to make some concessions with my wife. Like, you know, we're not going to, I've lived in New York City for 11 years. I'm not raising a family in this city. That's not happening.
Yeah.
But it's still, that's only been something that I've come to terms with in the past, like 2 years. So it was a slow crawl.
So there are parts of this poem that like still kind of speak to you then.
Oh yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Like that's the thing. If anything that annoys me the most about this poem is that I'm touching on things that were I to, I don't know, give myself the full 2 weeks instead of 2 days to do it, I might have actually like, you know, dug a little deeper and like thought, why am I thinking these things?
Mm-hmm.
Why am I throwing these things out at the last second? Like, well, clearly they're coming from somewhere.
Right.
So if anything, like, this embarrasses me in the sense that, like, I just wasn't studious enough. Like, I didn't take my time. Like, for instance, I just, like, really polished off and finished a screenplay that I knew finally after 7 drafts was done. The idea of me doing what, not essentially the same thing, but, like, working on one singular thing for what ended up being about a year's worth of work, seven different times, there's no way I would have had the work ethic or the drive or like just the desire to do that.
Right.
Like I was very much a kid that was like, it didn't help that I was like kind of a big fish in a small pond as far as the theater things went for me, like certain things like Shakespeare and like just getting on stage in front of people and doing things that were either like serious or embarrassing as hell just came naturally to me that like I didn't have a lot of direction. A lot of like I remember a lot of like the directors that I had were grateful in the sense that like they could give me some ideas, but they knew that they could like just kind of leave me alone and I would do something that was at least watchable. And they could help out some other kids who maybe were having a hard time like breaking through their shell and just being outgoing, which is really what high school theater is about.
Yeah. And I had the same experience when I went into theater in the first time, and it really actually brought me out in a lot of ways.
Is great. And like, that's what it should be. But it's like, if you're a high school director and you're like tired and your budget just got cut down significantly.
Yeah, and you're not making it up in bake sales.
Exactly. So you're just like, what do you want to do? Do you want to like focus on the kid who just shaved his head and glued his own hair to his face just because he thought it would get a laugh? Or are you going to focus on the kid who's been quiet the whole afternoon and maybe could use a little extra nudge?
Right.
I really just, if anything, it's nice to look at this now. And even though I'm disappointed in the, I could be a lot further along had I taken things a lot more seriously at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It goes to show that, like, you know, I can at least fake it pretty well.
Well, there is truly always time. So one last question before we wrap up here.
Sure.
Looking back at Answer and just thinking about these things, is there something... So you mentioned, like, I kind of wish I took things more seriously. Is there something that you would want young Andrew Sanford to know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's that just because... You get attention for being like the funny fat guy doesn't mean that you can't exercise or eat healthier or like try to buy clothes that fit. I really was like a person who I learned that lesson much too late of just being like, you know, healthy habits are good habits. I used to drink boxes of soda. Boxes, Tim. Like I would not go outside for days. Like just all kinds of stuff, like and then like wonder why I would be the first one sweating when we're practicing dances. Like
right.
I wouldn't care how I looked,
right.
Like, I wouldn't care that like I'm like nothing but like I would look like a very loosely filled sausage. Like if a sausage casing was like just like a little too tight but kind of full with it. I'm not sure if I'm describing this correctly.
Uh-huh.
Like muffin top is always the best way, but if you took several muffin tops and placed them one on top of another, that's what you would get.
Oh, well, can like, I just say your imagery has improved a lot since high school.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And it's like the gluing to, I remember I had a fro at one point during high school,
mm-hmm.
Like big, I had to sit in the back of every class that I was in. And at one point I legitimately did shave it. And when I did, I kept some of the hair and glued it to my face one day at school. Cause I thought it would make a good mm-hmm. fake beard. It didn't. But it got me attention for half a day until
right.
it itched and I took it off.
Right.
Like I would just say in general, I should have taken things more seriously.
Mm-hmm.
But here we are. If I had done that, I wouldn't have gotten the chance to be on this podcast. I always like to take any, especially when I'm doing something that I enjoy doing, anything that I've done up until this point led me here. And for that, I am grateful.
That's a great way to put it. All right. So we're going to wrap up here, but thank you so much for coming in and sharing these poems.
Thank you so much, man. This was a blast. Like, you got to, like, I love the idea for this show. And this was almost as good as, like, a mini therapy session for me.
Yeah, that's mainly what we try to do here is give people free therapy. All right. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you for listening to Paragraphs Lost. My name is Tim Hewitt. Our music is by Haley Hewitt. Our logo artwork is by Andrew Wallenberg. Thank you this week to our guest, Andrew Sanford. Andrew has his own news-based comedy podcast called Half White Son of a Black Man. It's a lot of fun. Really do check it out. We'll see you next week.